This is Susan Livingston reporting for Sequitur for Expressions of Peace Radio. Expressions of Peace. Personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Sequitur is archived under the Expressions of Peace tab at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. With habitat loss, ecological collapse, and consequent impending extinction as its main themes, Sequitur is a discussion of the natural consequences of actions at the individual, community, cultural, and species levels. Sequitur, it follows. Sequitur, the theme song, is by Zymphd. That's Z-Y-M-P-H-T. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. Sequitur originated as the Global Extreme Weather segment on Extinction Radio. The weather and climate news felt too urgent to abandon when Extinction Radio went on hiatus last spring, so Sequitur became a freestanding podcast. Inspired by Guy McPherson's Nature Bats Last, the focus of Sequitur expanded beyond extreme weather events and natural disasters to consider the overarching issue of habitat loss. Sequitur's content further expanded under the influence of Derek Jensen's book The Myth of Human Supremacy to cover extinction events and their drivers for the whole web of life rather than only property destruction and loss of human life or monetized livelihood. Aho, Mitakwe Owasan, we are all related. Happy Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday.
Hello, everyone. It's Benjamin the Donkey. We had a dream. Our dream of justice has passed. Life means oppression by caste. But soon now instead we'll be equally dead. Thank God we'll be free at last.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God I'm on the young! Free at last! Free at last! Free at last!
Vengeance. All the oppressors you knew, and whose torment you had to live through, and who filled you with dread, well, soon they'll be dead. On the other hand, you'll be dead too. Hee-haw!
That was Sound Gospel Train singing Free at Last. But I'm afraid I have to agree with Benjamin the Donkey's assessment. Here we are almost 40 years after Dr. King's assassination, and we are far from free. But before I get into all of that, I want to honor Dr. King with a brief summary of his holiday and a musical moment of meditation. According to Wikipedia, while the movement to create MLK Day began almost immediately after his assassination, the Act of Congress wasn't signed into law until 2 November 1983, by President Ronald Reagan. It was first observed on 20 January 1986. Some states resisted observing the holiday, gave it alternative names, or combined it with other holidays. Resistance to the holiday was led by none other than the senators from my own current state of North Carolina, who argued that King was a Marxist and an extra federal holiday would be too expensive. But a petition with 6 million signatures was hard to deny, and a House bill that passed by a vote of 338-90 was veto-proof. Several states renamed the holiday as Civil Rights Day or Human Rights Day, or combined it with other observances such as Robert E. Lee's birthday, ironic since Robert E. Lee was a Civil War general of the Confederacy. King's widow, Coretta, was named lifetime member of the Martin Luther King Jr. Federal Holiday Commission established by this act of Congress. My own former state of South Carolina was the last to honor Martin Luther King Day as a paid holiday. According to Wikipedia, the holiday was, quote, officially observed in all 50 states for the first time in 2000, end quote. Say what? You could have fooled me. A bill signed into law in 1994 by President Bill Clinton established Martin Luther King Day as a day of community service. It was never meant to be the consumer-oriented orgy, the display of pageantry, the photo op fundraising event I've noted in recent years. Also note that all this fancy legislative footwork is binding only for federal and state government employees who get a day off with pay on the third Monday of January. So you would think there would be more community service going on, eh? In the private sector, 33% of employers gave employees the day off in 2007. A 2% increase over the previous year, with no significant difference between large and small companies. The significant difference was between the nonprofit sector and manufacturing. In the public education sector, schools that remain open on Martin Luther King Day often have special programs to honor the holiday. Does producing this podcast count as community service? I hope so. I'd rather be distributing food and planting trees with my farm rads in Berkeley, but this is the best I can do in my present circumstances. What community service are you doing today? Or what subsequent community service commitment are you making today? Ponder it during the following musical meditation.
The very beautiful Joan Baez.
was Joan Baez singing We Shall Overcome live at Woodstock in 1969. It was uploaded to YouTube by a Brazilian national, judging from the contact email address, whose handle is Music for Peace at World. That's all one word with the numeral 4 instead of the word 4, who took the trouble to translate the lyrics into Portuguese. Music for Peace at World attributes the words and music to Zilphia Hart, Frank Hamilton, Guy Carawan, and Pete Seeger, and adds that the melody is based on a 17th century Sicilian fisherman's song that became a Protestant hymn when it arrived in Germany. It is traditional in Protestant congregations in the USA Deep South, and was adopted as the anthem of the civil rights movement, starting with the tobacco agricultural workers of South Carolina and then migrating to the public schools of Tennessee. According to Wikipedia, the lyrics were first published in 1900 by Charles Tindley, a Methodist Episcopal minister in Philadelphia, as I Shall Overcome Someday. By 1909, it was a popular invocation or benediction song at mixed-race public meetings. It was first used as a protest song in 1945, and it was first recorded by Joe Glazer in 1950.
You know, the new greed is good revelation turns out to include domination. It sounds not so nice when being precise. More than greed, it's exploitation.
And more than exploitation, it's wealth.
The alpha person who wields such power as government yields can be more discreet by taking retreat behind a few corporate shields. Hee-haw!
Yes, the real power is with the corporations because they are the ones who generate wealth in an economy based on growth. Martin Luther King knew these things, and that is why his straightforward civil rights stance of the early 60s developed into an anti-imperialist stance, and he came out against the war in Vietnam in his New York speech, the last one he gave before he was assassinated. Even Eisenhower knew these things, but had the discretion to remove the government from his admonition about the military-industrial complex. But such discretion is no longer called for. Anyone who has been following Standing Rock has surely noticed the militarization of the private, so-called security forces that were deployed. As John Perkins so clearly shows in his book, The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, the neoliberal government has unabashedly inserted itself into the military-industrial complex, just as it has inserted itself into the AMA insurance complex.
Hee-haw! Does our species deserve to elapse for the way we've behaved? Perhaps. But we're hard at it still, so it's certain we will by the time we're all done with collapse. Hee-haw!
Yeah, I don't know what we deserve or who gets to decide, but I think we're hell-bent on our own demise. I think we're so addicted to our post-industrial privilege and so unwilling to do our shadow work that we don't need climate change or rising sea levels to wipe us out. See if you can tell which verse in the following song was rarely performed due to its scathing indictment of our favorite species.
So I told his own mother that died. What the hell?
Peter, Paul, and Mary performing The Great Mandela, or The Wheel of Life, perhaps the darkest, most powerful protest song ever written, the point of which is that we are not helpless victims, we are deeply complicit. Heed the words of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, quote, "If only it were all so simple. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart?" Unquote. Quoting just the part about the line between good and evil makes the proposition sound somewhat more negotiable. I wonder if he'd been reading Carl Gustav Jung on The Gift of the Shadow. Jung said, quote, "There is no coming to consciousness without pain. People will do anything, no matter how absurd, in order to avoid facing their own soul. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. Light has need of darkness. Otherwise, how could it appear as light?" End quote. Wetiko is a vivid embodiment of the shadow that shows up with assorted spellings and pronunciations as an evil spirit or undead creature in indigenous lore across the northern reaches of North America. The Algonquin word has been loosely translated as greed. It was later conceptualized as a mind virus by the so-called enlightened Europeans. With assistance from my contributors' segments and occasionally resorting to Wikipedia, my commentary on the topic of greed, at once the most subtle and the most pervasive aspect of Wetiko, is closely based on the following sources: a series of articles in the Cosmos Journal, the one by Al-Noor Ladha and Martin Kirk titled "Seeing Wetiko: On Capitalism, Mind Viruses, and Antidotes for a World in Transition," is available online without a subscription. A series of articles in Reality Sandwich by Paul Levy, who frequently cites the indigenous author of Columbus and Other Cannibals, Jack D. Forbes. The full title of the Forbes book includes the tagline, "The Wetiko Disease of Exploitation, Imperialism, and Terrorism," and it was published 25 years ago. I immediately ordered it when I noticed it had a foreword by none other than Derek Jensen. Grace Dillon, a professor in the Indigenous Nations Studies Program at Portland State University, and Micaiah Freeman, senior researcher at toolsforfreedom.com, writing for Sign of the Times. Wetiko is an Algonquin word for a cannibalistic spirit, or a person or system enthralled to such a spirit, that deludes its host into believing that cannibalizing the life force of others, that's others in the broad sense, including non-human animals and other forms of Gaian life, is a logical and morally upright way to live. In the by now familiar pattern of a self-reinforcing feedback loop, it is both the cause and the effect of greed. Wetiko short-circuits the individual's ability to see itself as an enmeshed and interdependent part of a balanced environment, and raises the self-serving ego to supremacy. It is this false separation of self from nature that makes this cannibalism rather than simple murder. It allows or compels the infected entity to consume far more than it needs in a blind, murderous daze of self-aggrandizement without giving anything back, continually draining and impoverishing the planet of resources. Weticos are not in touch with their own humanity, and therefore can't see the humanity in others. Instead, they relate to others either as potential prey or as a threat to their dominance. Micaiah Freeman elaborates this idea of a self-perpetuating feedback loop where we become unwitting propagators of Wetiko. She characterizes Wetiko as a master of distraction, making us look outside of ourselves for people or groups that match our projections of evil or darkness, then falsely believing the darkness is only outside ourselves rather than looking within. Wetiko may appear as a monster with some characteristics of a human, or as a spirit who has possessed a human being and made them become monstrous. It is historically associated with cannibalism, murder, insatiable greed, and the cultural taboos against such behaviors. In some indigenous communities, environmental destruction is also seen as a manifestation of Wetiko. Native American historian Jack D. Forbes reports a commonly held belief among many indigenous communities that the European colonists were so chronically and uniformly infected with Wetiko that it must be a defining characteristic of the culture from which they came. Examining the history of these cultures, Forbes laments, quote, "Tragically, the history of the world for the past 2,000 years is in great part the story of the epidemiology of the Wetiko disease," unquote. It's interesting to note how much easier it is for our post-industrial consciousness to grasp Wetiko as a virus or a metaphor rather than as the same order of being as vampires, werewolves, and zombies. Grace Dillon of Portland State University describes the Wetiko, or Wendigo in the Pacific Northwest, as a malevolent spirit whose insatiable appetite for human flesh can never be satisfied, that has the power to turn humans into cannibals who suffer the same voracity. The Wetiko is depicted as a giant spirit creature with a heart of ice that has prodigious strength and is able to travel as fast as the wind, whose presence is in fact often signaled by a sudden cold wind. Ever hungry, it craves human flesh, which is the only substance that can sustain it. The personification of excess, greed, and gluttony, the Wetiko is a cannibal who eats another's flesh to steal their strength, essence, or spirit. The irony is that having eaten, the Wetiko grows in size, and its hunger and craving remain in proportion to its size. Thus, the Wetiko is eternally starving. The Wetiko shows up in Stephen King's Pet Sematary of 1984 and in Marvel Comics' Snowbird series, among other artistic, literary, and cinematic references. Dillon says, quote, "Historical evidence establishes the connection between the proliferation of Wetiko and colonization, as indigenous peoples were stressed by dwindling resources and deadly diseases introduced by European settlers. Starvation spawned the Wetiko, and colonization caused starvation. Therefore, colonization brought the Wetiko into being," close quote, as an insatiably hungry cannibal. Levy names names in describing how those afflicted with Wetiko, like a cannibal, consume the life force of others, human and non-human, for private purpose or profit, and do so without giving back something from their own lives. One example that symbolizes our self-destructive collective madness is the oil company's destruction of the Amazonian rainforest, the lungs of our planet. This is literally a full-bodied revelation showing us what we are doing to ourselves. Another literal example that is symbolically illustrating the Wetiko complex in action is Monsanto genetically engineering Terminator seeds that do not reproduce a second generation, thus forcing farmers to buy new seeds from Monsanto for each year's new crop. This makes survival for many poor farmers impossible, which has triggered a wave of suicides among farmers as Monsanto grows richer from the process. Before I pass the mic to Lisa White, I'll remind you that you are listening to Sequitur, a production of Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Sequitur is archived at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action.
Hello, everyone. It's Benjamin the Donkey.
Our animal nature. The reason we'll soon be deceased is we're not that much different from yeast. Born to compete, we'll become obsolete. It's the nature of every beast. Competition cooperation had evolved in a hierarchy fad in animal groups before humans taught dupes their myths of what's good and what's bad. Let's take a more accurate view. Much below angels, which we construe, we are not quite so sweet competing to eat, but that's simply what animals do. We live eating life which we slew, often leaving a mess when we're through. But it must be okay behaving that way, because animals do that too. Hee-haw!
Hello, this is Lisa White with Intuitive Balance. Let's get into greed and how that ties into Wetiko and the shadow. A lot of times we want to think of greed just in terms of those greedy corporations and the greed for money. But greed can take other forms, and it can be really, really subtle. You may not think you're a greedy person, but when I start describing some of the things that you can be greedy for, you might have a second think about this. Greed can also include the greed for power, the greed for being right, for winning an argument, the greed for wanting to be first in line, the greed for attention, always needing attention, the greed for validation, to be seen as a good person. You'll do anything to be seen as a good person. The greed for food, the greed for time on Facebook. These are addictions and they're distractions that we crave in our system, that we fill a void with in order to not feel the fear of facing ourselves. And so this is where greed comes in. It's a momentum of wanting to feed ourselves, whatever it may be, whether it's attention, praise, being thin, being seen and having our picture out everywhere, sex, being on the internet, exercise. All of these things can feed into greed. It isn't just about the corporations and what they did in 2008 to damage our world economy. We live in a program, and we have been programmed to see ourselves as less than, as incomplete, as needing more. These are voids in our systems that have been created to feed some corporations. And marketing is a strategic tool used by those corporations to feed these voids, to keep us consuming, to keep us wanting more, to keep us wanting Facebook, the newest iPhone, a new home, new stuff, to keep us shopping, to keep us looking at what the celebrities are doing so we can be just like them, to have us project our good parts of our shadow onto those celebrities and find our heroes instead of being our own inner heroes. So we're living in this program, and ironically, I used to be a marketing major before I entered the world of being a psychic medium. But I see how it works. And when you're pulling yourself out and being an observer of this situation and these dynamics, you start seeing the pull and the compulsions that you have to fill the voids within yourself through whatever it may be, whether it's power or needing to be seen as pretty. Any of these things, whatever it is for you, make a list. I did my list, and it was really surprising to see who I was to myself and what my compulsions and my distractions and my addictions were. But we're living in a program that we need to pull ourselves out of so that we can stop Wetiko. This is how it stops: awareness. We begin with awareness and a whole lot of love, a whole lot of self-love, taking time to really reflect and go deep within yourself. If you're not feeling good in your life and you're not choosing nurturing behaviors or choosing behaviors that make you feel incomplete or unnourished, then you really need to sit down and take inventory kindly and compassionately and see that which you might not want to see. Because when we can do that, it neutralizes. It's like throwing an acid on a bad stomach. It helps save the system. It helps get us back into a more neutral zone instead of these wide swings in extremes that we're experiencing now.
In the understanding of First Nation tribes from North America, Wetiko consists of two essential characteristics: chronic inability for empathy, and an egoistic fixation on one's own personal benefit and profit. While often declared as unchangeable psychological features of humanity, greed, selfishness, and violent impulses may in fact not be our human nature, as many claim, but rather the outcome of our alienation under capitalist conditions. We only consider egoism, hatred, and brutality to be normal because over the past few thousands of years, our civilization has been conditioned in this way, basing its economy on war, its social organization on domination and conformity, its religion on punishment, damnation, and sin, its education on coercion, its security on the elimination of the supposed enemy, its very image of love on fear of loss. Psychoanalyst Dieter Duhm, working in the 60s and 70s, found that whether his patients suffered depression, heartache, or schizophrenia, the root cause was fear. Fear is endemic in the capitalist culture, even among the sane. Whether speech anxiety, fear of authorities and institutions, fear before and after intercourse, fear of the future, or fear of getting sick, fear is the inconspicuous and normal neurotic common ground. He writes, quote, "Fear is not only the product of capitalism, but part of its foundation, an element without which this entire system would collapse," unquote.
Case in point, in the United States, it's really interesting to see dynamics play out where we have elected Trump as our president, but we couldn't have elected him unless it really represented some part of ourselves. So for those who are really daring in listening to this, if you want to sit down and go, what do I see in Trump that I can acknowledge in myself? Now, it doesn't have to be amped up into extremes, but maybe you do need to be seen as good. Every time Trump gets criticized, he goes on a rant because he can't see himself as being a bad person. Where do you do that in your own life? And can you show a little compassion toward Trump for that type of behavior? And this is again where awareness is key. If you can start seeing something in someone else where you can have compassion, it neutralizes the charge and the reaction that you are throwing out into the world toward that person or toward Facebook friends who might be supporting that person. It helps end the polarization that we are seeing happening right now. And the polarization that's happening is only because we're denying our shadows. So shadow work to me is one of the greatest things we can do to help bring peace into this world and into our societies and neutralize the charges that we're seeing right now. We're also projecting our inner hero onto celebrities. Case in point, Meryl Streep coming out against Trump. That created such a charge and such a surge in optimism and heroism because we don't want to see the hero in ourselves, and we can be our own hero every day. So, just to review, greed feeds Wetiko, but we only have these greedy tendencies because we're afraid. We're afraid of being connected. We're afraid of seeing Trump in ourselves. We're afraid of seeing that awful, icky neighbor in ourselves. We're afraid of seeing that sinister brother-in-law in ourselves. Whoever it may be, or whatever it may be that you're afraid of seeing in yourself, or that you may be afraid of revealing to the world as a true talent and skill that can be healing to others. Look at your fears of yourself and seeing something in someone else that you might see in yourself. This is where we start. Find that awareness. And if you need more help, find someone who is skilled in Jungian psychology, a spiritual director. I also work with clients to help go through this type of work, to be a witness, a compassionate, neutral witness to your process and to the revealing of yourself to yourself. So thanks for listening, and be well.
Thank you, Lisa. Like you, Micaiah Freeman also recognizes the value of Wetiko in the very heart of its threat. She says, quote, "Whether we look at Wetiko as a cunning enemy out to destroy us, or a cheeky challenger out to prod and poke us into fuller awareness is a matter of perspective. Obviously, it is more empowering to view the created situations and outcomes of the mind virus as gifts rather than as curses or burdens, because the former view may spur us on to become better people, while the latter may lead us to anger and hate. We do at least have that much choice. But unless we are already a fully awakened or enlightened individual, we do not yet have the choice of whether to invite Wetiko into our lives or not. It's already here, and it's not going away, unless every last speck of shadow is fully acknowledged. The way to defeating Wetiko lies in the realization that it only has power when it is hidden. We get fooled into thinking we have to fight something to change it, when the very act of fighting creates a resonance field with that which is being fought, and by doing so, we strengthen it and become it. These ideas are exactly in line with what famous psychologist Carl Jung said about the shadow. Quote, "Until you make the conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate." Unquote. The qualities and aspects that we don't like, acknowledge, or love in ourselves are the ones we judge, criticize, and attack in others. As Eckhart Tolle writes in his book The Power of Now, it is better to refer to the darkness as unconscious rather than evil, because evil as a description connotes more separation rather than inclusion, and therefore decreases the likelihood of integration. The ultimate solution to the problem of Wetiko is to see it in yourself. It will always be easier to see it in others, but as long as we remain focused on changing others, we neglect the crucial shadow work we must do ourselves. Only you can integrate your own shadow. Unquote. Paul Levy describes Wetiko as, quote, "a truly quantum phenomenon in that it is the deadliest poison and the most healing medicine co-joined in one superposed state." Unquote. Merely trading one Wetiko for another at the top of an otherwise unchanged Wetiko infrastructure, as in the case of Stalin replacing the czars, or more contemporarily, Obama replacing Bush, is largely pointless. At best, it might result in the softening of the cruelest edges of a Wetiko machine. At worst, it does nothing except distract us from seeing the true infection. When Western anthropologists first started to study Wetiko, they believed it to be only a disease of the individual and a literal form of flesh-eating cannibalism. On both counts, as discussed, their understanding was, if not wrong, certainly limited. They did, however, accurately isolate two traits that are relevant for thinking about cultures. One is the initial act, even when driven by necessity, creates a residual, unnatural desire for more. And two, the host carrier, which they called the victim, ended up with an icy heart. That is, their ability for empathy and compassion was amputated. Weticos are arrogantly, ignorantly, and self-righteously convinced that they are in possession of the truth and working for the highest good. It is as if they are unable to know that what they are doing is evil, unable to register their actions as anything other than good. Quoting Forbes again, "Wetiko is spread by the Weticos themselves as they recruit or corrupt others. It is spread today by history books, television, military training programs, police training programs, comic books, pornographic magazines, films, right-wing movements, fanatics of various kinds, high-pressure missionary groups, and numerous governments. One of the tragic characteristics of the Wetiko psychosis is that it spreads, partly, by resistance to it. That is, those who try to fight Wetiko sometimes, in order to survive, adopt Wetiko values. Thus, when they win, they lose." John Compost Cossum is hard at work on owning his shadow. John?
Thank you, Susan, for inviting me back to contribute to Sequitur again. As usual, having a theme has caused me to think and to do some research, and also this time to be a little introspective. So the subject is greed, and as I think most people know, that is one of the seven deadly sins. But I'm not going to be dwelling on theology or too much on the morality of greed. However, I do think that greed is rooted in the competitiveness of evolution and survival of the fittest, and that this has led to our success as a species, or partly led to our success as a species. Individuals and groups who could forage and collect, store and process a lot of food or other items may have had an advantage over less acquisitive groups.
Hee-haw! Hello, everybody. It's Benjamin the Donkey. You know, in order to eat, you compete. Foster trust, then unfairly mistreat. Act real kind when you greet folks you meet on the street, but survival works best if you cheat. It seems we evolved to compete, including the shrewdness to cheat. It's just rinse and repeat, but if you think you're sweet, take your socks off and smell your feet. Hee-haw!
However, in modern life, greed has moved on from just food. It's a lot wider. It encompasses money and possessions, power, and even sex. It is most often used to criticize others. So, if I have more than you, then I've earned it, or I deserve it. But if you have more than me, you're greedy. Many authors have pronounced on greed. Eric Fromm described greed as a kind of poverty trap. He said, "It's a bottomless pit which exhausts the person in an endless effort to satisfy a need without ever reaching satisfaction." I'm especially interested in greed in the context of sustainability, resource use, and carbon emissions. Now, there are now a tremendous number of people on the planet, and that means that we really cannot be greedy. It is completely unsustainable with how many resources we are using that we don't need to use. However, only a minority of people are very greedy, and I am using the term in a critical way. So globally, about 8% of the population own more than $100,000 worth of assets, and these people own over 80% of global wealth. If you look at just the top 1%, then they own half the world's wealth. There must be some greed involved with some of these people's lifestyles. Wealthy people have carbon footprints which correlate closely to the amount of wealth they have. So I'm broadly not a fan of overconsumption and the overaccumulation of wealth and resources. I am very interested in how we can make the world a more equal place and help people who are in poverty come out of poverty, and how we can reduce the wealth of the super rich whilst not reducing their happiness. I believe that greed seems to be part of capitalism. Capitalism is based on economic growth. It's based on people getting more and more wealthy as time goes by. I prefer a green way of doing things, which would be to try and achieve something called a steady state, where there is no economic growth, that people learn how to consume the same amount year by year rather than increasing the amount that they buy and spend. I'm not an economist, and I can't really speak about a steady state economy with any maturity. I just think it sounds like a better idea. We live on a finite planet, and therefore we should treat the planet's resources in an appropriate way to that finite planet. And greed and overconsumption do not fit. They're unhealthy, and they're really causing a lot of problems. One of my main concerns is food waste. I've been a master composter for over 10 years, and I've been a freegan for more than 30. Freegan means I like getting stuff for free. So I go into bins and skips and dumpsters to reclaim stuff. I also like foraging from hedgerows, and I get occasional food, mushrooms and berries from local trees, and I pick up logs for my wood stove for free as well. There are occasions when I find something like some electrical equipment where I decide that although I'm not going to get anything out of this, I want to go and put it in the proper skip at the civic amenity site, and it will get recycled as waste electronic and electrical equipment. There are times when I find things that I can end up selling. So I sometimes find electrical flex, copper wire, and I strip that and roll it up and sell it to the local metal merchant, and I make a few pounds each year. Now, there are times when this foraging behaviour seems to be feeding the innate greed that I have as a human being, that I alluded to at the beginning, that I think that people do like to find stuff and have stuff and buy stuff and get more and more and more. And so there are times when I bring home so much food that I can't use it. I do supply food not bombs from time to time, and I'm involved in a number of other projects that help distribute waste food around the city to the needy. But sadly, although I compost most of it, I do like to eat as much of this food as possible. So this has led to a bit of a funny conundrum in my lifestyle, which although I'm very active and I get out on my bike and I'm in the garden digging compost or cutting my hedges, lead a very healthy lifestyle, I do eat quite a lot of this waste food. And that means that around my midriff, around my belly, I have a little tubby bit of fat, and I do wish it would go away. But I find it very difficult to say no to eating some of this lovely free food. So this is really odd, because my greed for waste and for not wanting to waste stuff is actually adding to the size of my waste. So it is a good job that I can laugh about myself. I'm John Cossum, and I'm speaking from York in the UK.
Thank you, John, for your personal story and also for spotlighting the relationship between greed and the global economy. Paul Levy defines wetiko as, quote, a psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that I call malignant egophrenia, which is undermining the evolutionary development of our species, unquote. Certain people, groups of people, corporate bodies, or nation states embody and act out this psychological malady in the world. Consumer culture continually fans the flames of never-ending desires, conditioning us to always want more. It is as if our spiritual pockets are being picked. As if starving, we are in an endless feeding frenzy, trying to fill a bottomless void. This process of rabid, obsessive-compulsive consumption is a reflection of a deeper, inner shared sense of spiritual starvation. The entity of the global economic system itself is a living symbol of out-of-control wetiko disease in business. The two defining characteristics of the globalized economy are the prime directive, which is to increase capital, and the fundamental operating principle, which is that selfishness is rational and rationality is everything, therefore selfishness is everything. This means that, quote, we are pitted against each other in a form of distributed fascism, where we cocoon ourselves in the immediate problems of our own circumstances and consume what we can. We then couch this behavior in the benign language of family matters, national interests, job creation, GDP growth, and other upstanding endeavors. Close quote. The big weticos who control the levers of power, be they the super wealthy, CEOs of corporations, bank presidents, or leaders of nation-states, are particularly dangerous as they define the terms of our dialogue, dominating the agreed-upon historical narrative. Managing our perceptions through the propaganda engines of the mainstream corporate media which they control, big weticos in positions of power create the limits of our conversation and debate. The global financial system displays the fear-based linear logic of wetico disease and is one of the most rapid vectors by which the virus of wetico is becoming pandemic in our world as it reduces everything to the bottom line of dollars and cents. Money has become indispensable for our biological survival as well as our psychological well-being and need for social prestige. This results in the drive for acquiring money becoming hardwired into the most primal centers of our reptilian brain. The wetico economy, or wet economy, captivates and holds spellbound the credulous, semi-conscious masses, or sheeple, who are more than willing, based on their childlike need to hope and believe in an authority outside of themselves, to give away their power so as to quell their fear. A perverse synergy occurs in the revolving door between government and high finance that I learned about in the New Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. The political system becomes a front for and extension of the banks. The United States Treasury is bankrupt, which is to say that it is owned by the banks. Having the upper hand, an international clique of banking elites are the ones who give the orders and choose the politicians who will occupy the positions of power to do their bidding. This is clearly evidenced by President Obama stacking his cabinet with the very same people who created the economic crisis in the first place, all of whom have intimate insider connections with and allegiance to a corrupt cabal of high financiers. Some things never change. Think of the bank bailouts, a criminal heist of historical proportions, where the banks blackmailed our nation, putting a metaphorical gun to our government's head, threatening that if we don't give them what they ask for, they will crash the global economy and we will have martial law. We acquiesced at the expense of our national sovereignty. This real-world process is an externalized reflection of the psychic coup d'état being perpetrated by the wetigo bug within our own psyche. Recognizing a deep process within ourselves as it is revealed to us in the seemingly outside world is to begin to spiritually awaken. Paul Levy's new book is titled Awakened by Darkness, When Evil Becomes Your Father. I'll end with another quote from the Reality Sandwich articles. We fall under the self-inflicted illusion that we are not responsible and are merely victims of the system, and yet we are simultaneously feeding off and supporting the very evil of the system as it kills us. Energetically, on the level of the deeper underlying field, we pay a steep price if we are buying into this Faustian pact with the devil. We receive what appear to be benefits, wetico frequent flyer miles, so to speak, but at the ultimate cost of our own genocide. Similar to accepting candy from a predator, the rush of immediate gratification provides an apparent short-term benefit at the cost of our integrity, our freedom, and ultimately our lives. Our true power comes when we see our culpability and complicity in this process and accept our responsibility, thus enabling our ability to respond, which gives us the power to choose differently and change things. End quote. You've been listening to Sequitur, a production of Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Thanks to Benjamin the Donkey for help with the hosting, Lisa White for her synthesis of the topic, John Compost Cossum for his willingness to show up fully in his humanity, musical guests Peter, Paul, and Mary, Joan Baez, and Sound Gospel Train, and to Zimft for the Sequitur theme music. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston.
Connects us is one.